Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. On Saturday morning, a gunman opened fire at the Chabad of Poway Synagogue in Southern California, where the congregation was gathered on the final day of Passover. One woman was killed and three others were injured. The shooter was white and he reportedly yelled anti-Semitic language when he entered the synagogue. The attack came 6 weeks after a shooter killed 50 people at two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, and 6 months to the day from the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where 11 people were killed. All three attacks have digital connections, online forums that provide a place for hate to thrive and which have inspired terrorism. Before the Poway shooting, a user claiming to be the gunman apparently posted a link to a manifesto on the online message board 8chan.
8chan is a fairly large website. A number of things go on there.
Robert Evans is an investigative journalist with the research collective Bellingcat.
8chan's whole board is where this person and the Christchurch shooter both announced the start of their massacre. And Poll is essentially a neo-Nazi gathering place on the internet. And the goal of the users there is to radicalize each other further and further and eventually convince other people to carry out attacks like this.
So if these sites are breeding hate, the question is whether enough is being done to track and respond to the spread of white nationalism online. Since taking office, President Trump has cut funding to an Obama-era program designed to combat domestic terrorism. To put all this in context, we turn to Hannah Block Wiebe, an assistant professor of law at Drexel University, and Robert Evans, the investigative journalist we heard from earlier. Robert started by laying out the evidence connecting the shooter with the 8chan post.
The post includes a link to the manifesto. The manifesto has the shooter's name in it, and the name has been, you know, confirmed pretty early on. The language is all sort of what you'd expect for a case like this. It included a live stream link, which thankfully did not work for very long. It was a pretty open and shut case as far as I'm concerned.
Robert, 8chan tweeted on Sunday about the original post, and I'll read you what they said. They said the Poway shooter's post on 8chan was taken down 9 minutes after creation. There are only screen caps available and no archives exist since the post was deleted so quickly. The loudest groups publicizing this crime and giving attention to this criminal are the fake news media. That's 8chan quoting their tweet there. Walk us through the response, Robert. What are they trying to say?
Oh, they're trying to say that they're not responsible because they deleted the original post. But when I got onto 8chan's poll board about an hour or so after the shooting, there were numerous people, other users of the site, posting screen grabs of the initial post that the shooter made, as well as sharing his manifesto and sharing the Christchurch shooter's manifesto and the video of the Christchurch shooter shooting. And in fact, when I started reporting on these people, I mean, I've been reporting on them for years, but when I reported on them in the wake of the Christchurch shooting, they first off sent off a death threat to me and put a bounty on my head. But they also would repeatedly post links to the video of the Christchurch shooting and the shooter's manifesto and brag to me that I could never get it taken down, that it was going to continue spreading on the internet and they were going to keep spreading it. And they're going to do the same thing with the Poway shooter's manifesto. Like, the fact that the leadership of the site claims that they took down the post quickly is meaningless, because they knew quite well that other users would continue to spread everything this person had posted.
Hannah, I want to bring you in here, because just listening to what Robert was saying about 8chan's response here, how do we explain how sites like 8chan are able to even stay up after posting content like this?
So under U.S. law, under the Communications Decency Act, an online forum can't be held liable for the unlawful content that its users post.
Cannot, correct?
Cannot. So what the government can actually do to prevent 8chan from continuing to enable these postings is highly limited. The U.S. government can't take the forum offline. It can't even take a specific sub-forum offline, and nor can it block access to the website, even though my understanding is that other governments around the world, including New Zealand and Australia, have done so.
let's talk a little bit about the distinction also, which is there's a legal distinction between hate speech and true threats of violence. How does the law distinguish between those two? Because in my mind, one leads to the other in many instances.
Right. So the U.S. Supreme Court has held that hate speech is entitled to First Amendment protection, and Nazi speech is also entitled to First Amendment protection. Speech that incites violence, true threats, speech integral to criminal conduct are not protected. So the problem here is that you're absolutely right. It's difficult to draw boundaries between all of these categories, but the law that we have does attempt to draw these boundaries, even though sometimes one category of speech that's presumptively protected can provoke speech that is then unprotected and even outright violence, as we saw in this case.
Robert, let's talk about that distinction here. How do you interpret that?
You know, there was a case in Oregon in I think the mid to late 90s, the murder of a young immigrant named Mulugeta Sarraw. And the murder was directly inspired and provoked by a guy named Tom Metzger, who was the head of a neo-Nazi organization called White Aryan Resistance. And Metzger did not kill Sarraw or directly order his death, but he did radicalize the young men who beat him to death and urge them to commit crimes like the killing of Mulugeta Sarraw. And Metzger was eventually convicted of, I think the term used was vicarious responsibility for the crime. And he was sued for several million dollars successfully. Being able to do that to the owners or people running 8chan would be like, I don't think that the current law is set up to allow that. But in my mind, at least, if you're looking morally at what's going on this site, it is kind of the same thing. There's less of a direct hierarchy than there was with White Aryan Resistance, but there's certainly the same incitement to violence going on. So I think that what they're doing, I think that the people running the site, certainly, I would say, at least morally, have a vicarious responsibility for these shootings.
Hannah, is the government, is the U.S. government taking the threat of white nationalist online communities seriously enough now that we've seen the evidence that these communities have incited actual violence?
I don't think so. I think this attack should motivate the government to take white nationalist and white supremacist violence much more seriously as a threat to public safety, public order, and particularly to vulnerable groups. But instead, what we've seen is that there doesn't appear to have been a consistent effort or consistent successful effort to prevent these violent attacks. And instead, this is the second synagogue attack in 6 months. So to my mind, that means that the government should be using many more tools that it has at its disposal in order to prevent these violent acts from occurring.
Robert, I'm wondering here, there was a similar post made on 8chan by the shooter who killed 50 people in Christchurch, New Zealand, 6 weeks ago. The man who killed 11 people at the Tree of Life Synagogue was also celebrated on 8chan. Why aren't we asking where these folks are radicalized? Why do we use different language for domestic terrorists versus folks on the outside?
I mean, that's a very good question. And we don't all use different language. Within sort of the countering violent extremism community, the issue of sort of how Islamic terrorists are radicalized online and how right-wing terrorists are radicalized online, it's very similar, and we speak about them in similar ways. But they're dealt with very differently by our legal system and dealt with very differently by law enforcement. You know, Lieutenant Christopher Hassan, the Coast Guard member who was planning a massacre that seems fairly similar to some of these other massacres and was inspired by a lot of the same people. You know, he cited Anders Breivik as an inspiration for the massacre he was planning, who the Christchurch shooter and the Poway shooter also cited. Lieutenant Hassan was only caught before committing his massacre because he was buying drugs illegally online. And it looks like right now he's about to be let out early because the judge says they don't have enough to charge him with terrorism, even though he wrote out clearly on his work computer that he was planning a terroristic massacre.
Robert, I'm going to pause there because, Hannah, yeah. Given this example, the government doesn't have enough?
What the government has in order to charge Hassan might not be more than his posts online. And I think if we're looking to simple sort of online posts or manifestos without more, it sets a troubling precedent for the idea that the government could charge anyone for a crime based on something they've written. Obviously, there's sometimes a very strong connection between those writings and acts of violence. But where the government has investigated and hasn't turned up enough to have probable cause to charge someone, that suggests to me that either they're not doing their jobs, or there really isn't anything there to support the idea that an attack was actually going to take place.
Robert, your thoughts on that? And should the government, what should the government do about sites like 8chan, in your opinion?
I mean, it's difficult to say, you know, when somebody writes out on a computer, I'm planning to kill these people, this is my goal, and I'm stock, and we also know that they're stockpiling weaponry. But it's also, it's not illegal to stockpile weaponry. It's not illegal to stockpile ammunition. It's not illegal to write out on your own private Word document plans to massacre people. So I agree, it's very difficult legally to charge these people. And I don't know what exactly is the solution to that going forward. But I will say, if Christopher Hassan was an Islamic extremist and had been planning an attack in that vein, I suspect more would be done, and I suspect more would be done to keep him behind bars. As far as what can be done to deal with this problem of online radicalization, I don't think anyone has a solid answer to that yet. I mean, I would like to see these gathering places no longer up and available, but that's almost an impossible goal because there's numerous web hosts all around the planet, many of whom would be happy to host a site like 8chan's poll board. We've had the same issue getting a neo-Nazi site called Stormfront off. You know, it's been successfully taken down for weeks at a time at some points, but they always find another server. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of similar to the problem that law enforcement has shutting down sites that distribute child pornography. There's always someone somewhere willing to host them. What I will say can be done and absolutely is within the power of American law enforcement to do is to monitor these sites better, is to try to track some of these people down, which they can do, is to be looking at these sites. A young woman was actually browsing 8chan's poll board when the shooter posted the link to his attack and his manifesto a half hour before the shooting began, and was desperately calling and also tweeting to on social media, reaching out to the FBI and calling them on the phone, trying to get someone to do something, and was unable to reach anybody and to get any action taken. In my mind, there should be law enforcement monitoring these places at all times. We know where they are. We know where they're trying to get people to radicalize and announce other attacks. Police should at least be watching them.
Robert Evans is an investigative journalist with the research collective Bellingcat. Robert, thank you.
Thank you.
And Hannah Block-Wiebe is assistant professor of law at Drexel University. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you.